God's utterance. Christ does the work of judgment with the truth. The work of the last days is to separate all according to their kind, to conclude the management plan of God, for the time is near and the day of God has come. God brings all who have entered His kingdom, that is, all those who have been loyal to Him to the end, into the age of God Himself. However, until the coming of the age of God Himself, the work that God shall do is not to observe the deeds of man, or to inquire into the life of man, but to judge his rebellion. For God shall purify all those who come before His throne. All those who have followed the footsteps of God to this day are those who have come before the throne of God. And this being so, every single person who accepts God's work in its final phase is the object of God's purification. In other words, everyone who accepts God's work in its final phase is the object of God's judgment. The judgment, in the words previously spoken, "judgment will begin at the house of God," refers to the judgment God passes today on those who come before His throne in the last days. Perhaps there are those who believe in such supernatural imaginings as that when the last days have arrived, God will erect a big table in the heavens, upon which a white tablecloth will be spread, and then, sitting upon a great throne with all men kneeling on the ground, He will reveal the sins of each man, and thereby determine whether they are to ascend to heaven or be sent down to the lake of fire and brimstone. No matter what the imaginings of man, the substance of God's work cannot be altered. The imaginings of man are nothing but the constructs of man's thoughts and come from the brain of man, summed up and pieced together from what man has seen and heard. Therefore I say, however brilliant the images conceived, they are still no more than a drawing and are not able to substitute for the plan of God's work. After all, man has been corrupted by Satan. So how can he then fathom the thoughts of God? Man conceives the work of judgment by God to be particularly fantastic. He believes that since it is God Himself doing the work of judgment, then it must be of the most tremendous scale and incomprehensible to mortals, and it must resound through the heavens and shake the earth. Otherwise, how could it be the work of judgment by God? He believes that as this is the work of judgment, then God must be particularly imposing and majestic as He works. And those being judged must be howling with tears and on their knees begging for mercy. Such a scene must be a grand spectacular and be deeply rousing. Everyone imagines God's work of judgment to be preternaturally wonderful. Do you know, however, that God began the work of judgment among men long ago, and all this while you have been nestled in peaceful oblivion? That the time that you think God's work of judgment is officially beginning, it is already time for God to make heaven and earth anew. At that time, perhaps you will have only just understood the meaning of life. But the merciless work of punishment of God shall bring you, still deep in sleep, into hell. Only then will you suddenly realize that God's work of judgment has already concluded. Let us not waste precious time, and talk no more of these abhorrent and detestable topics. Let us speak instead of what constitutes judgment. When it comes to the word judgment, you will think of the words that Jehovah spoke to all the places and the words of rebuke that Jesus spoke to the Pharisees. For all their severity, these words are not God's judgment of man, only words spoken by God within different environments, that is, different settings. These words are unlike the words spoken by Christ as he judges man in the last days. In the last days, Christ uses a variety of truths to teach man, expose the essence of man, and dissect his words and deeds. These words comprise various truths, such as man's duty, how man should obey God, how man should be loyal to God, how man ought to live out the normal humanity, as well as the wisdom and the disposition of God, and so on. These words are all directed at the essence of man and his corrupt disposition. In particular, those words that expose how man spurns God are spoken in regard to how man is an embodiment of Satan and an enemy force against God. In undertaking his work of judgment, God does not simply make clear the nature of man with just a few words. He exposes, deals with, and prunes it over the long term. These methods of exposure, dealing, and pruning cannot be substituted with ordinary words, but with the truth that man does not possess at all. Only methods of this kind are deemed judgment. Only through judgment of this kind can man be subdued and thoroughly convinced into submission to God, and moreover, gain true knowledge of God. What the work of judgment brings about is man's understanding of the true face of God and the truth about his own rebelliousness. The work of judgment allows man to gain much understanding of the will of God, of the purpose of God's work, and of the mysteries that are incomprehensible to him. It also allows man to recognize and know his corrupt substance and the roots of his corruption, as well as to discover the ugliness of man. These effects are all brought about by the work of judgment, for the substance of this work is actually the work of opening up the truth, the way, and the life of God to all those who have faith in him. This work is the work of judgment done by God. If you do not regard these truths with importance and constantly think of avoiding them or of finding a new way out apart from them, then I say you are a grievous sinner. If you have faith in God, yet seek not the truth or the will of God, nor do you love the way that brings you closer to God, then I say that you are one who is trying to evade judgment, and that you are a puppet and traitor who flees from the great white throne. God will not spare any of the rebellious that escape from under his eyes. Such men shall receive even more severe punishment. Those who come before God to be judged, and have moreover been purified, shall forever live in the kingdom of God. Of course, this is something that lies in the future. The work of judgment is God's own work, so it should naturally be done by God himself. It cannot be done by man in his stead, because judgment is the conquering of the human race through the truth. It is unquestionable that God still appears as the incarnate image to do this work among men. That is to say, in the last days, Christ shall use the truth to teach men around the earth and make all truths known to them. This is God's work of judgment. Many have a bad feeling about the second incarnation of God, for man finds it difficult to believe that God would become flesh to do the work of judgment. Nevertheless, I must tell you that often the work of God greatly exceeds man's expectations and is difficult for the minds of men to accept. For men are merely maggots upon the earth, while God is the Supreme One that fills the universe. The mind of man is akin to a pit of foul water that gives rise only to maggots, whereas each stage of the work directed by the thoughts of God is the distillation of God's wisdom. Man constantly wishes to contend with God, to which I say it is self-evident who will suffer loss in the end. I exhort you all not to regard yourselves as more important than gold. If others can accept the judgment of God, then why can you not? How much higher do you stand above others? If others can bow their heads before the truth, why can you not also do so? God's work has an unstoppable momentum. He will not repeat the work of judgment again for the sake of your merit, and you will be filled with boundless regret at letting such a good opportunity slip. If you do not believe my words, then just wait for that great white throne in the sky to pass judgment upon you. You must know that all of the Israelites spurned and denied Jesus, and yet the fact of Jesus' redemption of mankind still spread to the ends of the universe. Isn't this a reality that God made long ago? If you are still awaiting Jesus to take you up to heaven, then I say that you are an obstinate piece of deadwood. Jesus will not acknowledge a false believer such as you, who is disloyal to the truth and seeks only blessings. On the contrary, he will show no mercy in casting you into the lake of fire to burn for tens of thousands of years. Do you understand now what is judgment and what is truth? If you have understood, then I exhort you to submit obediently to being judged. Otherwise, you shall never have the opportunity to be commended by God or to be brought by Him into His kingdom. Those who only accept judgment but can never be purified, that is, those who flee in the midst of the work of judgment, shall forever be detested and rejected by God. Their sins are more numerous and more grievous than those of the Pharisees, for they have betrayed God and are rebels against God. Such men who are not worthy even to do service shall receive more severe punishment, a punishment that is moreover everlasting. God shall not spare any traitor who once evinced loyalty with words, but then betrayed him. Men like these shall receive retribution through punishment of the spirit, soul, and body. Is this not precisely a revelation of the righteous disposition of God? Is this not God's purpose in judging man and revealing him? God consigns all those who perform all kinds of wicked deeds during the time of judgment to a place infested with evil spirits, letting these evil spirits destroy their fleshly bodies at will. Their bodies give off the stench of corpses, and such is their fitting retribution. God writes down in their record books each and every one of the sins of those disloyal false believers, false apostles, and false workers. Then, when the time is right, he casts them amidst the unclean spirits, letting these unclean spirits defile their entire bodies at will, so that they may never be reincarnated and never again see the light. Those hypocrites who did service at one time, but are unable to remain loyal to the end, are numbered by God among the wicked, so that they walk in the counsel of the wicked and become part of their disorderly rabble. In the end, God shall annihilate them. God casts aside and takes no notice of those who have never been loyal to Christ or dedicated any effort, and shall annihilate them all in the change of ages. They shall no longer exist on earth, much less gain passage into the kingdom of God. Those who have never been sincere to God, but are forced by circumstance into dealing with Him perfunctorily, are numbered among those who do service for His people. Only a small number of such men can survive, while the majority shall perish along with those who are not qualified even to do service. Finally, God shall bring into His kingdom all those who are of the same mind as God, the people and the sons of God, as well as those predestined by God to be priests. Such is the distillate obtained by God through His work. As for those who are unable to fall into any of the categories set by God, they shall be numbered among the unbelievers. And you can surely imagine what their outcome shall be. I have already said to you all that I should say. The road that you choose shall be your decision to make. What you should understand is this: the work of God never waits for any that cannot keep pace with Him, and the righteous disposition of God shows no mercy to any man.